This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the KTTH smartphone app. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link to the app on your iPhone or Android so you can stream this show and the station wherever it is you are. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
So James O'Keefe and Project Veritas was promising over the weekend a video that shows you how anti-Trump CNN is, that this is going to be the video that ends all videos to show all of the nonsense coming from CNN, because as anyone who actually watches CNN and pays attention, there's very clearly an anti-Trump bias. But how deep does that go? There was a lot of buzz about this video. I have to say, it's not nearly as bad on the video as the tweets indicated.
No.
Just not at all. And I think it's important to call that out, that kind of exaggeration out, because number one, we should not be in the habit, regardless of our political positions and who's putting out the video, don't be in the habit of taking out of context videos that are trying to make points out of media bias when you don't know the full context, and certainly when you don't realize that some of this stuff only sounds bad to people who don't know how newsrooms work. Now, I have no doubt that there is systemic bias over at CNN. I have no doubt about it. The video doesn't prove that. But they did have someone who was undercover.
My name is Kerry Porch. I'm a satellite uplink technician. I'm a contractor at the CNN Washington, D.C. Bureau. I decided to wear a hidden camera. I decided to secretly record the 9 a.m. rundown call meetings. And it's basically run by Jeff Zucker, the president of CNN.
Now, that part, if true, is weird. They only show you cuts from this meeting. Jeff Zucker is the president of CNN. You generally don't expect a CNN president or Fox president or an MSNBC president to be this kind of hands-on day-to-day, but that's what Jeff Zucker is doing. Let's listen into some of the video again. These are snippets of a phone conversation he had with his team.
Hey, let's start with Washington, please. I don't care about the MSNBC event, okay? I don't care about them. Let's just stay very focused on impeachment.
Now that he said, let's just stay very focused on impeachment, that shows, oh, they're trying to push impeachment. No, it does not. It does not. In fact, if that's what he actually meant, there would be more to this audio cut in particular that provides that kind of context. They're saying, let's be more focused on impeachment because that's the news of the day, and that's clearly what is intended. I would not be shocked if that exact same message was said at Fox News, right? If Fox News is editor-in-chief or anybody who's running the news department there says, come on, you got to stay focused on this impeachment stuff. They're not saying we need to be focused on supporting impeachment. They're saying it's the big news story. That's what people are coming to us right now for. That's what we should deliver. There's nothing wrong with that clip just there from Jeff Zucker. Now, part of the reason why people go to a position of suspicion is because of the on-air product. And I think that's a reasonable thing to listen to that out of context and say, oh, well, I watch CNN. I know how crazy it is. This shows it. But take away that confirmation bias, it ain't there.
We're moving towards impeachment. I mean, don't, like, you know, we shouldn't pretend, oh, this is going one way. And so all these moves are moves towards impeachment. So
Does anyone disagree with that, by the way? All the moves that are being made right now by Democrats are moves towards impeachment. Again, I don't think he is saying in this context, because it's happening at a rundown meeting, I don't think he's saying, let's push for impeachment. He's saying, let's cover the pushes for impeachment.
Yeah, you know, I'm saying, I know that there's a lot of people at CNN that are friendly with Lindsey Graham. Time to knock that off, and it's time to call him out.
So that's the one thing that maybe, maybe, in context would be objectionable. If you had trouble hearing, he says, I know a lot of you guys are friends with Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, but let's knock that out. Let's call him out. What I think in context, because I've been involved in meetings like this, I think he's saying, stop letting your bias get the best of you. Call out what people are asking for, which is take a position. That's all. Again, nothing objectionable here.
I think what's going on in America now is really fundamentally the result of years of fake news, conspiracy, nonsense from Fox News.
So there, again, another thing, in context or out, sounds kind of bad, but does it? He's going after Fox News. We know that Jeff Zucker doesn't trust or like Fox News. This is the competitor that is crushing them every single day in the ratings. If you guys are hoping that there's something there in regards to this Project Veritas business, it isn't. And I got to say, because I went into this knowing that we were going to be burned because we've been burned before by Project Veritas, they are taking advantage of conservatives that don't actually know how the news is done, and they're pushing this for personal gain. And there was some stuff over the weekend, again, on Twitter that said, hey, Twitter's going to shadow ban this. Twitter's going to stop it from going out there. So make sure you sign up for this email address, because then we'll send you a note when the video is out there so you can go ahead and tweet it out there and make it impossible for Twitter to shadow ban it. That's all a scam. Sorry, it's a strategy. It's a smart strategy. It gets people to sign up for a database that they will then shoot you other emails so you can spread their content. There was no shadow ban. Not on this. Sorry. I really don't like it when people like James O'Keefe, who I'm not a fan of, pull this kind of nonsense. They do it all the time. Because someday they're going to have something that is actually worth exposing, and people are going to dismiss it and completely ignore it because of their history. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
So the Tacoma City Council last week overwhelmingly passed a ban on tents in parks. And they did it over safety. 8-1. That's a huge win, despite the fact that activists claimed that this criminalizes the homeless. This was deemed controversial. I didn't find it controversial at all, and I guess neither did the council. So now the city is doing what they should be doing, which is working to find shelter for people who are homeless and are impacted by this. Because there are folks like Alfonso Roach, who's a homeless man, talking to Q13, says he doesn't know where he and his friends are going to go and live.
People don't want to live like this. These people out here, these tents. I used to laugh at people like this. And you know, I used to kick people away from in front of my house because they had tents. Then I caught myself walking down the street with a shopping cart full of my possession. We got to move away from here December 1st. Where are we going to go? Where are we going to go?
There are plenty of places for you to go. Now, the city is going to be able to help, but so will the county council. So will a whole bunch of nonprofits in the region. The fact of the matter is, right now, if someone asks for help, we can give it to them. Whether we're talking about in Tacoma or just outside of Tacoma, we have beds in shelters for you. Now, a lot of people, which he downplays a little bit, a lot of people don't want shelter because they don't want to follow the rules. We've heard that from people living out on the streets, saying, you know what, they're adults, they don't want to have to follow the rules. Okay, I'm losing my compassion for you. I've got compassion for all the people who desperately want some help, who want a hand up, who want some mental health treatment or addiction treatment or job trainings. They want it. They just don't know where to go. Those people exist, and I have so much compassion for those folks because I want to get them off the street. If you're someone who doesn't want to follow rules, if you're someone who doesn't want our help, I'm no longer going to focus my compassion nor advocate resources for you. Because we can only go to you so many times and offer you this help and you just tell us to shove it and move on before I'm going to then move on. And then that's kind of on you, because I'm not going to let you just camp out wherever it is you want to camp out. We've got a neighborhood filled with taxpayers who want to enjoy that park, and you're ruining it. You're ruining it because of a selfish reason. Now, Michael Yoder is the executive director of Associated Ministries. This is a Tacoma-based group working to help the city find alternative spaces for people. And they're hoping that the city will connect with the faith-based community a little bit more.
There can't be an ordinance that just says not here if there isn't an alternative side to that.
So I disagree with that on its surface. I know what he's saying. But sorry, there are circumstances in which you say, I just can't have you stay here. It's dangerous for you. It's dangerous for others. I don't necessarily have another place for you to go. I just know that this one particular spot is not suitable for any human being.
And everybody does need to have a legal, humane place to live. The city needs to invest in basically restoring trust with the faith communities, and that's what they said, we want to do that.
Now, that line is because he says red tape has prevented some churches from providing shelter for people who have faith communities who are willing to step up. And yes, we should look at that. We should look at making it easier for faith-based communities to do it in a safe and reasonable way that also takes into consideration the communities in which they're based. It is true that we can all benefit from getting rid of some of the red tape. It is also true that we can be doing a little bit more on a personal level. If you've got an activist out there who's screaming about how uncompassionate it is to move someone from a park living out in a tent, ask them if they will house this individual in their home or in their backyard. Because these are the ones who are the loudest. I see them on Twitter. They're retweeting stuff all left and right. But I don't really see them stepping up and helping. Let's actually insist that they help. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Text Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow Saul Spady and Ben Shapiro and Michael Medved as well. Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Or just search for the screen name Jason Rantz on Twitter. Twitter.com/Jason Rantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So Ken Fisher is a billionaire money manager. He made some low-key sexual comments that offended some folks over at a conference in Vancouver, Washington. And I think... check the rules, Producer Peyton. Are we supposed to excommunicate him from society for saying something deemed sexually offensive?
Yes.
No. Is that on the list?
It's yes.
Not? Is it?
Yeah.
I think it is. The woke list.
Yo, that list.
Yeah,
I was
don't look
at
the reasonable
other list.
Yeah, don't look at the reasonable. The woke list says we have to get rid of him.
Yes.
Okay. Get rid of him. Fisher is in charge of Fisher Investments, which airs ads on Fox News Radio, which we carry. I don't think they're actually a sponsor here on the station directly. He compared the process of gaining a client's trust to, quote, trying to get into a girl's pants. That according to a whole bunch of people who were there, including the fact that it was caught on audio.
He said this interview with me, and they only ran the part that they asked me about the market. They didn't run into the part they asked me about other stuff. Because I'm kind of like an open book, but most people don't want to read it. If you can't talk about tennis jewelry, you can't really deal with the customers. I don't know if you get that now. Going up to the woman in the bar and saying, hey, I want to talk about what's in your pants.
Going up to a woman in the bar and trying to get into a girl's pants. Okay, so some folks were offended by it. Rachel Robeschiotti, she's the founder of a wealth manager group called Robeschiotti and Phillipson. She told Bloomberg News, I was floored. For me and some of the women sitting nearby, we were kind of in shock. We were like, wait, did that really just happen? And Bloomberg Magazine notes that he's actually made comments like this in the past.
I mean, the most stupid thing you can do, which is what every mutual fund firm in the world always did, was to brag about performance in a direct mail piece, which is a little bit like walking into a bar when you're a single guy and you want to get laid and walking up to some girl and saying, hey, you want to have sex?
Okay, so he's clearly speaking provocatively. There's... certainly nothing by a reasonable standard that would get it bleeped on TV or radio. But the question is, well, whether or not that is appropriate in 2019. And I think clearly the answer is no. We've gone very far in one direction to say we need to make sure we don't even hint at saying something that one person could deem inappropriate. And certainly reasonable people can look at that and say, okay, that goes a little bit too far for him. He said in an interview with Bloomberg, I've given a lot of talks, a lot of times, and a lot of places and said stuff like this, never gotten that type of response. Mostly the audience understands what I'm saying. I regret at this moment in time that I said any of the things I said. I regret I accepted that speech invitation because it was kind of pain in the neck. So he's like a goofball, snarky dude who's probably thinking we're going too far in one direction and going after politically correct speech. Now, I'm clearly in the camp of wanting more speech rather than less. And while some people were offended, what bothers me is when people pretend to be offended. I'm willing to take someone's good faith argument as to why this kind of speech is counterproductive. Totally get it. I'll have an honest conversation with you and I'll probably agree. I don't like the people who pretend to be offended by something because they think it makes them seem a certain way. Maybe in a way that will grant them some additional business in the future. I don't know why. But I watched a video by Alex Chalakian. Chalakian, I believe his name is. He's CEO of a company called Lake Avenue. And it basically is a financial firm. They do this kind of stuff, the same thing that Fisher Investment does. And he posted a video on Twitter to express his outrage. And there was just something about the way he talked about what had happened that just does not seem legitimate to me.
It was horrible. Things that were said by Ken Fisher were just absolutely horrifying.
Okay. Nothing that he just said there is horrifying. Now, granted, we only played a clip of it, and maybe there's some other stuff that's out. Horrifying? No. Inappropriate? Yes. Maybe went too far given the purpose of this event? Okay, fine. Horrifying? The way he sounds, the way he's talking about it, as if he was all like, wore a Nazi uniform and said, Sieg Heil to everybody. Like, let's pull back just a little bit on some of our language. Because I want to have a reasonable conversation, but I find it hard to have reasonable conversations with people who talk about smaller things in such a big way.
Well, and don't walk past the fact that it sounded like he's reading off cue cards. This was horrifying.
Yeah, it's just...
It was a right? horrible
I'm not, well, let's
gesture.
Play some more of the audio and tell me if you feel any differently. Because it just... It felt phony to me.
He made comments about genitalia, talked about picking up on a girl, and don't show him what's in your pants. He made a reference to Jeffrey Epstein, talked about charities are immoral, mentioned things about tripping on acid, and other inappropriate comments at the conference. And talking to some of the men and women, they were disgusted by this.
Disgusted.
Many of the women expressed to me this is one of the reasons why they don't like coming to these conferences. It makes them feel very uncomfortable, and this obviously doesn't help the situation.
See, that, and it was that line, because I have no doubt that some women feel that way, and they have the right to feel that way. I think in a lot of cases, they're 100% correct. But that line to me read as if he was saying, oh, but I'm not one of those men. I am equally outraged by this. Give me a pat on the back. There is this cottage industry of people feigning outrage because they think it's going to increase their social clout score. That people out there will say, oh, that dude Alex, he's woke. We like him. He's going to get some extra social points for us. Next time we're looking to do business, we're not going to go down this politically incorrect route of Ken Fisher. I'm going to go with Alex Chakalian, whatever his name, Chalala, Lake Avenue. I'm going to go with him because he's woke just like us. That's just how it came off to me. And by the way, it's also not, I'm not proud that that's how I respond to this. I think none of us should be proud if we responded that way, but it does show sort of the consequence of constantly beating that drum about how offended you are. We just did a segment in the last hour, SpongeBob SquarePants being racist and violent and pro-colonialization, and it shows white privilege, and it shows cultural appropriation, like... You're not actually offended by that. So why are we pretending to make yourself sound good? Okay, you're the best person in the world, Alex. Please stop talking to us about it now. Granted, you put in your little bio. Jason Rantz called me the most perfect person in the world. I'm virtuous and humble, blah, blah. Put in your bio and never speak again.
I come to work every day striving for that compliment so that I can put that in my Twitter bio.
You're going to have to use a long road to travel on that.
Oh, but this guy just gets it after putting out, what, a 90-second video? Great.
It was 2 minutes and 15 seconds. Ugh. I only played 45 seconds of it.
Absolutely great.
I'd love to hear from folks out there on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Just send me a quick text message. Did that seem phony to you, that message there? And maybe it didn't. And if it didn't, that I could be very just cynical at this point, jaded with all of this. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. But keep the language clean and pure because I don't want to be triggered by the way some of you are talking because some of you are just awful.
Jason Rantz is the best boss that I
That's
have
true.
Ever had. This is an incredible place to be. And I love my life every day.
Hey, Jason has good hair.
Jason has good hair.
I wish I had it.
Do I get that compliment yet? I wish I had it.
1-800-465-8770. Send me your text message.
Bellingham, Bellevue, Shoreline, Tacoma.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rantz Show.
Olympia, Everett, Mercer Island.
Stories about you. Not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. Producer Peyton, what do I do at 4:30 every weekday afternoon?
I think you do the Big Local.
Brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept is really, really simple. the media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They end up ignoring a lot of stories that you guys care about because they happen in your communities that these reporters and writers don't really care about. They don't hang out in Linwood. They don't chill in Tacoma. So the Big Local, we focus on you and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. And let me tell you something. You know what feels really, really good? Ignoring the city of Seattle. And we start with a little bit of a distressing story in Linwood. You got hundreds of low-income units being scheduled to be demolished in Linwood by the Housing Authority of Snohomish County, and it's freaking out residents like Darla.
I don't have the money to move to, whether it's down the street, another apartment, or out of state.
Now, it seems very clear that this needs to happen. It needs to be bulldozed and rebuilt. They say the underground sewer and fire alarm systems are in such need of repair, it's cheaper to tear the building down and start from scratch. So that's what they're going to do. But now there's a little bit of a fight on how to deal with the people who are living there. There's a push right now that doesn't yet have the support of the council there to take advantage of this relocation assistance program where tenants get up to $2,000 to relocate. Half of it is paid by the landlords, and the other half of it is paid by the city. Now, in a case where the county is the landlord, there are some problems there. There's some folks on the council who seem to think this is too complicated or they don't have the money. And generally, I don't actually like the landlords having to pay for this in a case like this, but they should do something, yes? I don't know why there's such resistance from the Linwood City Council to do something. It does seem like the right thing to do. You've got people who are low income who are relying on this housing because you've offered it to them. Do you not hold any at all support for them once you're kicking them out? So I do think they should step up and pay for the $2,000 to relocate these people, or $1,000 and have the county pay the other half. That's why we have that system there. And in this case, it does seem like something that, at least optics-wise, looks good. But also, it's the compassionate thing to do in this case. These people don't want to move. And I have to assume that part of the reason why you've decided at this point to knock down these units is because of your own ineptitude. Sorry, Housing Authority of Snohomish County, I'm going to treat you the way I would treat any agency and say, why is this taking so long for you guys to address it? And as you've waited long times to fix these problems, the sewer system or the fire alarm system, like, has it gotten worse and more expensive because you waited? That's kind of on you. So they should step up. But you know what? They should also get creative over at the Linwood City Council. They should get a little bit more creative. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. Maybe tax breaks for apartments that provide some kind of subsidy for any of these people, or low-income housing in the future. Offer some subsidies. Get involved and say, you know what? We understand that you're taking a risk renting out one of your units or two or three or four of your units to someone who is low income because there's the possibility that they're not going to be able to pay as on time as you'd like. To make it a little bit easier for you to handle, we're going to give you a tax break. Whatever the tax break at 5%, whatever it is, we're going to say, you know what? We've got a pot of money here that we will dip into if they're ever late in their payment. We will take responsibility for up to 3 months. Like, there are things like that that you can actually do. And it doesn't just have to be in the city of Linwood. You can certainly reach out to the communities around Linwood and say, hey, you know what? We've got some ways that we're going to work with you. This is a really good time, regardless of how they deal with this immediate issue. Have some more of the conversations about sort of long-term fixes. Meanwhile, in Tacoma, they're dealing with two problems related to attacks on cars. People are either torching cars or shooting out their windows. But remember, just write this down in the, always remember this, Tacoma does not have a gang violence problem. Write that down.
Tacoma does not.
Underline it. You don't have to do it in all caps. Okay. Just underline it for emphasis. Because I'm told that we don't have any gang violence problem in Tacoma or Federal Way. Just throwing it out there. So a woman's car was torched last week. Police say it's the third car that was set on fire in recent weeks. Cairo 7 says the fire was so fierce, it blew out the windows and the inside was gutted, left burnt and crispy. The car owner said it was her only car. She doesn't have the money to afford another one, so she doesn't quite know exactly what to do. Police say it was arson. Now, Carol Painter is the name of the car owner. She said someone used a rock to smash a window and throw a flaming object inside before taking off down a nearby alley. And she's quoted as saying, "I have a hard time believing somebody is that malicious and doing it just for kicks. That's what I think it was." So she's saying they're just doing it for kicks. Okay, so keep that in the back of your mind as we talk about this other story. Because also happening in Tacoma, car windows are being shot out, and it's becoming very, very common.
I have no respect for other people's property. It just breaks my heart.
Cairo 7 TV reports that there's been an uptick in shots fired calls over the summer. That, by the way, is generally normal. We seem to see those kinds of things happening in summer. Neighborhoods in the south and east ends of Tacoma have been hit the most. Last week, Lynette Scheidt became the latest victim.
They think it's funny. They think it's a game. And to me, it's $300, $400 out of my pocket.
So the same argument that these kids are doing it and they think it's funny. And in this case, this is the worst possible time for her.
My grandson's on hospice. My husband's on hospice. I'm just trying to get by.
So surveillance cameras caught a red truck slowing down before the window shattered. Tacoma police have now dedicated three detectives to solve the numerous cases. They say there have been an increased patrol in the targeted areas and some arrests have, in fact, been made. So here's my prediction in this. Once we figure out exactly who's responsible, it's either bad teens who will, in fact, join a gang or actual gang members doing this. But the fact of the matter is, I'm assuming it's a gang or it's just a young troublemaker or young troublemakers because they think it's funny that this is kind of like a prank. This seems like a prank a gang member would do. Again, I go into this story with some bias because I think it's ridiculous that we're downplaying the fact that there's a Tacoma gang problem. And so maybe I'm fitting the facts into a narrative I already have in my head. But if it is true that they're just doing this for fun, that seems like what gangbangers would do. Or at the very least, the kinds of kids who are vulnerable to becoming gang members. Which is why we should have the opportunity, take this as an opportunity yet again, to talk about how do you get kids off of that path to doing stuff like this. Because at some point, the kids who are doing this, they're going to start shooting at people. They're going to start throwing incendiary devices at cars with people in them. And soon someone's going to be legitimately hurt. Someone might die. And so it seems to me that we should be reminding folks about the importance of family, which I know we're not supposed to talk about, because apparently it's politically incorrect to point out that a lot of gang members come from broken homes where they don't have a mother and a father or two moms or two dads or people who are in their life who are adults who are taking care of them, asking them very simply, "How was your day, son?" They don't have that. And they end up looking at other adults who are taking advantage of them or older kids who are taking advantage of them because they're vulnerable with not having a responsible, loving adult or adults in their lives. And they end up going down that wrong path, and we're not supposed to talk about it. And you know what we don't do? Is when we say there isn't a gang violence problem, we don't have these conversations. And because we don't have these conversations, we're not reminding people about the importance of this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, you've got more and more kids joining gangs. You've got to put resources into programs that help get kids off of the streets. So instead of thinking to themselves, "Oh, you know, it'd be really fun throwing a incendiary device in this car. That'd be so fun." Why don't we start investing in programs so that kid can then go to, I don't know, a community center and play ping pong? Is that still lame, ping pong? Do the kids not want to do?
Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever the kids are
play on. Play basketball at the community center.
Yeah, well, that's just not inspired. I don't want to. That's felt
Why?
Cliche. This felt cliche is all. But okay, fine. I don't care. Give them a basketball court. This is ridiculous, though. And then finally, real quick, video taken by a home security camera appears to show a cougar walking along a driveway on Mercer Island. And before you think, Producer Peyton, that I'm going to screw this story up, I confirmed that it's an older woman looking for frat boys.
Confirmed.
Yeah, I saw the video of the woman in online.
There's video.
Yeah.
And you found the woman.
She was older, and it was a story about a cougar, and she was talking. So I don't know what you're talking. So why are you giving me that look?
Is she the reporter of the story?
Well,
because I'm going to assume that she didn't interview this cougar, so you probably didn't see the animal, the cougar.
I didn't have the sound on. I just looked at the title.
That's a reporter, Jason.
Oh.
You should use sound next time. You know, we have all these senses, eyes, ears, you know. Don't taste the video, but watch it, listen to it, take it in.
Oh, okay. Oh, and they do say that the Department of Fish and Wildlife were called.
Yeah, okay. I don't think that they would do that, a woman walking around.
I take it back. It was not a older woman who was prowling for younger college men. It's an actual cougar. Now, I don't know why we keep talking about this, because the people who live on Mercer Island, they don't seem to be worried. Here are a few talking with King 5.
I know some people are scared, but I think the fact that there's like that kind of wildlife here is just exciting.
Oh, he was checking the place out. I guess he swam over. I'm surprised he's finding that much to eat.
Well, because he's not, and he's going to eat you because he's swimming. He's tired, and I know we've gendered this cougar for some reason to be a male. I don't know if there's any evidence to suggest that it's a male. But they're going to eat. That dude's going to be eaten by a cougar.
I know that wouldn't be, like, a good story to cover, but in weeks, awful. Imagine the, like, foreshadowing of us talking about this cougar.
No,
like, once
I don't
want to
be known for foreshadowing that kind of death.
And then it does maul somebody.
No, here's what's going to happen. The cougar's going to become domesticated. And it's going to be a cute, little, adorable, kid-friendly Mercer Island cougar.
That would be cool.
And it's just going to be like, it's going to become a mascot for the area. And we're going to train it to go after whomever is putting up all those swastikas on park benches and walls. Because we've been covering those stories a lot. What if it's maybe the cougar's not doing that.
Have you asked the cougar, though?
Well, I haven't spoken. I've just seen video.
It's probably,
by the way, the same stupid cougar. I guarantee it's the same cougar.
Oh, yeah. There's not two of them walking around Mercer Island. Could you imagine two cougars being on Mercer Island?
It's not even a cougar. I bet you it's just a house cat. And just the perception of where they put the camera, it's probably like a Ring camera.
You know, I saw...
It just makes it look bigger.
I saw a video of the cougar.
It's a kitten.
It's a huge cougar.
Okay, never mind. I mean, you don't have to body shame the cougar. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show live on this Monday afternoon. There's a study out that's... It's clickable. I'll give it that. It's clickbait. It was released by Go Banking Rates, which is a website, a blog. They say Seattle and Bellevue are among the 25 U.S. cities where earning $100,000 isn't enough to cover basic living expenses. That is not true. That is not true. It is true that in the context of a conversation like this, let's say $100,000 in Seattle or Bellevue doesn't go as far as, say, $100,000 in Yelm or Covington or Oso. That is true. Yes, in Longview with $100,000 in Kelso, you're going to be going a long way. In Seattle and Bellevue, not so much. It is a very flawed study, however, and it's flawed by design. Their methodology is kind of ridiculous. They're comparing someone who makes $100,000 a year in salary. This is before taxes. And they're comparing it to the average rent. Okay. Right there should be a giant red flag. What if you've got two people in the household that you're purchasing? Because if you're looking at the average rent, let's say they're looking studios all the way until four-bedroom apartments. Let's just assume that. Although usually when we do studies like this, and I couldn't find this on their website, usually it's they're looking at the average rent for a two-bedroom apartment. But let's just push that aside for a moment. Let's just say it's all in the average. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because if you're someone who is single making $100,000 and you have a one-bedroom apartment or a studio, you know what's more expensive than a one-bedroom apartment? A two-bedroom apartment. Do you know that when you're single, you're generally not getting two-bedroom apartments, you're getting one-bedroom or studios? Like, you understand that, right? And now, who's more likely to get two bedrooms?
Probably people who have, you know, multiple people living in the house.
Like a couple?
Yeah.
Okay, so then in that world, why would we then compare just one salary of the household for a two-bedroom apartment and not the second person? Now, we can go with both of them having $100,000 before tax. So that's $200,000. You're very easily paying for your rent. Again, $200,000 or $100,000, going to go much further in the Tri-Cities. No, 100% that is true. But let's stop pretending that $100,000, you're barely scraping by. You're basically in poverty. That's ridiculous. And it's these types of really dumb stories that get picked up by a whole bunch, usually millennials. Sorry to throw that out there, Mr. Producer Peyton, who is a millennial just like I am. But people pick this up and then they say, see, Seattle is impossible to live in.
Jason,
because you got to make $100,000.
This is why I need a raise. I live just outside of Bellevue.
Okay, first of all, you live in Newcastle, which, by the way, you probably can't afford. But how are you affording to live in Newcastle?
I got roommates.
Exactly. How
Lots
many roommates?
Of them.
How many?
Four others.
Okay. Does that make rent a lot cheaper?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So let's talk about the people who complain about how expensive it is. Because, again, kudos to you. You generally don't do this. But it's people your age. How old are you?
24.
24 years old. Complain, oh, I can't afford to live in Seattle. I don't really hear that coming from Bellevue from a millennial perspective. I usually hear it from millennials in Seattle. I want to live on Capitol Hill next to all the bars and the trendy restaurants. Okay, well, it's expensive to live there. But I want to live there. No, I know, but you're going to have to pay more than, let's say, you live in Northgate or in Rainier Valley or not in Seattle at all. Yeah, but I don't want to. Okay, well, then if you don't want to, you're going to have to pay. I don't want to have to pay as much as I would if I lived in, what's a really expensive place?
In
Bellevue.
Okay.
So, let's
Medina?
Medina. There you go. Medina. I don't want, so you know what I don't do? Live in Medina.
That's a good call.
I mean, it's crazy.
If you don't want to spend Medina money, don't live in Medina.
And if you want to live in Capitol Hill, cool. I'm glad that's what you want. I think it's an overrated neighborhood, but if that's where you want to live, awesome. Take on a roommate. Or take on four, like Peyton is doing. Or get a studio. Or get a one-bedroom instead of a two-bedroom. And then all of a sudden, things are not quite as expensive as you think. I hate this. I hate stories like this. Bellevue's too expensive. Okay, well then move to Redmond or Bothell or
Newcastle.
Factoria or Newcastle. Newcastle's not that cheap. I'm just saying, there are other options for you. Do you really want to live in a world in which we're pretending $100,000 makes you poor in Seattle?
I would love to be poor.
Doesn't that go a little bit too far to one side? I get it. I get it. We all want more money. I would love more than my $3.7 million paycheck that I get every single month, actually. I would love to get more than that.
I know you would.
Because I'm greedy.
I know you would.
I'm just saying. God, I hate stories like this so much. And there's someone who's listening to me right now who lives in like Kenmore or Puyallup. And you're saying, oh, really, $100,000? You're complaining about $100,000? I'll take it. My husband will take it. My wife will take it. Just stop. But it's good clickbait, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because it got us to click on it.
I clicked on it.
God, I hate surveys like this done by blogs no one has ever heard of because they know that a bunch of idiots who are complaining all the time about the cost of living are going to spread this on Facebook and no one will call them out except who will call them out?
You.
This guy right here. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. It's the Jason Rand Show.